welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today Dr. Suzanne Piscopo. She's a senior lecturer in nutrition, family and consumer studies here at the university and teaches in the B.Ed and M.Ed courses as well as in the Masters in Gerontology, the Diploma in Gastronomy and the Diploma in Social Studies, Gender and Development. Dr. Piscopo has also published in various publications and websites and is the author of health-related storybooks for children. Welcome to you, Dr. Piscopo.
Thank you, Patricia.
Today we'll be talking about a particular project that you've been working on, which in English is Healthy Eating with Fonso. But before we get into that very interesting project, I read up a little bit about it for this program and I got really sort of involved in it. Just a general comment. When I was at school, there wasn't, many years ago, of course, but there wasn't much interest really in food. I don't think that there was much even awareness until much more recently about food values, which are good for us, which aren't. But things have really changed now, haven't they?
Yes, definitely. Well, thanks again, Patricia, for inviting me to the program. You are right. There's a much greater awareness nowadays on the importance of making, you know, wise choices when it comes to the food which you consume. Obviously, and this awareness is across the lifespan in the sense that, you know, elderly people maybe are more sensitive to these things because they tend to maybe have diet-related problems which are emerging as they grow older. But you have the younger generation who are very much aware that they should also be responsible for their choice of food because of its short-term and long-term impact on their health. What is interesting as well is that even, you know, the new parents, let's put it this way, recent parents would be very much aware of this responsibility that they need to provide a healthier diet for their young ones, for their offspring. And, you know, as a result of all this awareness, of course, the media has had a large role to play there as well, even within the school system. Now there is a greater focus on health and nutrition education, even in the, you know, national curriculum and in the local syllabi related to that national curriculum. Even the new curriculum, which is being proposed, has placed a greater focus on health and nutrition education at the primary level with the younger children. Maybe before, I mean, for a couple of decades, we've had subjects such as home economics, which have been doing sterling work when it comes to nutrition education. But this was always limited to those students who chose the subject and at secondary level. And the research shows us that the earlier you try to instill healthy eating habits, the more likely that these will be retained as the children grow older. So it's key that we work with the younger children and with their parents, who are mainly the main food providers, of course.
Very true. The project, as I said before, is called Healthy Eating with Fonso. This was a European project. So perhaps you'd like to give us a bit of an outline overview of it.
Yes, very simply, what happened was the British Nutrition Foundation were working on a project called the European Food Framework. And this project, or this framework, intended to develop a list of competencies, they call them, with respect to what children should know by the time they leave school. What they should know in the area of diet, food and drink, in the area of physical activity, and in the area of energy balance. Basically, you know, what you consume and how it's translated into calories, very simply, and how you use up those calories. So that's the energy balance. Now, they worked, I was also involved in a team where we developed these competencies for different age groups. So what children should know by the time, let's say, they're midway through primary school, at the end of primary school. It wasn't only knowledge, it was knowledge, attitude and skills. So it's sort of facts, but it's also your attitude towards food and towards health, and also very practical skills which you should have, you know, at the different stages of your schooling. Once this food framework was developed, the idea was that now let's develop some projects where we apply this framework. So how are we going to test where these competencies can actually be achieved with the different age groups. And, you know, different partners from different countries were invited to submit proposals, how to sort of apply this framework. And I was very pleased that we got selected. Our proposal was successful for Malta. And the proposal which we set up was focusing on working with primary school children. This links with what I said earlier with the need to start with the young children. And we decided to focus in Malta on diet, food and drink, and energy balance, sort of calorie intake, calorie output. Why didn't I focus on physical activity? I mean, it's equally important in this sort of whole formula, but I was aware that even colleagues from the our faculty itself, Faculty of Education, are working very hard on physical activity and promoting physical activity in schools. But I felt that there was a lacuna with respect to maybe help available for teachers and training for teachers and resources available in the area of specifically of food and health, resources which were developed, let's put it this way, by Maltese people for the Maltese context for Maltese students.
But were there other partners in this project, or was it just a Maltese thing?
Well, the Healthy Eating with Fonso is the Malta project. Other countries, there were five other projects which were which took place in other countries, such as in Spain, they developed a website for teenagers related to healthy eating, which was very cute as well. In Austria, they also worked with teenagers, and they did kind of mini workshops, very hands-on work with teenagers. So the different countries did different things. And then the England itself, the British Nutrition Foundation itself, also developed their own project, where they worked with both primary and secondary. So different countries held different projects, and the target audiences were somewhat different. Obviously, again, the messages differed according. Some were very similar because some, of course, nutrition science is universal, and you're not going to change the science. But in the sense, the context of our food choices will differ according to country.
But you did have a chance to compare notes and
definitely
put across your ideas
as
listen to others, of course.
You're right, and that's very, very valid and very valuable. The meeting of the partners was crucial in even sort of sounding out ideas, you know, bouncing ideas off each other kind of thing. Like, we're planning to do this, what do you think? Or have you ever done this before? How did it work in your countries? What were, you know, problems which emerged? How did you overcome them? So during the development of the projects and even their implementation as pilot projects, there were regular meetings between the partners to share, you know, with each other what was happening, ideas, and basically also get inspiration from each other, because that's something which, you know, that's the added value really of international projects.
The main features, I mean, you have mentioned perhaps a couple of them, but the main features of your particular project, what was it?
The Healthy Eating with Fonso was basically centers around a resource pack of teaching and learning materials. It's actually two packs. These resource packs are targeted at year two, let's say, 6 to 7 year olds, and year five children, which would be like 9 to 10 year olds. The resource pack is made up of a variety of materials, such as a student's handbook, a complementary teacher's student's workbook, and a complementary teacher's handbook. Then there are DVDs with PowerPoints which describe different foods and food groups. These PowerPoints then are complemented by interviews with Maltese children talking about different foods and why they are good for us to eat and their sources. There's even video, we call them photo stories, actually, of children, Maltese children, making up healthy snacks. We also came up with an original song, Hashish Ufrot, Fruits and Vegetables and Fruit, which we created purposely for this project. It's really targeted for the younger children. It talks about different fruits and vegetables, their colors, their format, how we eat them, local and imported. And it's basically promoting, you know, the consumption of fruits and vegetables. So there's this song, and there's a dance video that accompanies it also. The dance was actually carried out by Maltese children. So children were very much involved. In fact, at the outset, that was a clear thing. We wanted to involve children in actually the production of the materials. So even the mascot, Fonso is actually a rabbit. But we didn't just sort of choose this rabbit, you know, ourselves as the people who were producing the materials. What happened mainly, we actually did a ballot. We had three characters. One of them was Fonsu. Then we had Lola Nanna Kola, which is Lola the ladybird. And we had Michu El Atuth, Michu the cat. We had these three characters. We put them literally on a ballot sheet. We went to two different schools and we gave this ballot sheet to about 200 children and actually voted for which mascot they would prefer on teaching and learning materials. You know, which mascot, which character would they want sort of to talk to them about healthy eating and to give them advice. And Fonsu was the one who was elected. So it was a bit of like citizenship there as well and a sort of democracy. Yes, yes. We wanted to do that as well, but it's actually a skill which is also being emphasized even in our local curriculum. So, and the whole idea of this resource pack and something which is very crucial is that the worksheets with the children and the other activities can be done in a cross-curricular manner, in the sense that if we're talking about, you can integrate, let's say, healthy eating with mathematics, let's say two fractions. You can integrate healthy eating and you know, physical activity information through, let's say, comprehensions related, you know, English or Maltese. So there's very much, the activities can be used by teachers, you know, as an activity on their own, in a sense, a self-contained activity. Or they can say, like, let me use this sort of activity in my English lesson or in my math lesson or my science. They have things like, you know, growing plants or observing the process of a plant growing, such as tomatoes or beans. So it's actually science, but then you weave in the healthy eating message which you want to bring in. And that's why we developed the teacher's workbook, because the teacher's, handbook, literally spells out to the teachers how that activity can be integrated with a different school subject and the key health messages to deliver through the activity.
Before going into the workbook and the handbook a little bit more in detail, because that, I really found those fascinating, the problem of the two age groups, I was very impressed that you'd actually gone for these Form 2 and Form 5.
Year 2 and Year 5, the primary, sorry, yes, that's okay.
That must have actually been sort of like double trouble, really.
Yes. Well, of course, because as children are growing, and this is where the educational theory comes in, their conceptual capabilities, in the sense what, you know, their understanding of concepts will change rapidly from, you know, what a 5 and 6 year old can understand is very different from that what a 7 or actually 8, 9 year old can understand, their level of conceptualization. So the messages which you put across have to, so I'll give you an example. So if we're talking about a particular food, right? So if you're talking about milk, yes, you can talk about, let's say, so milk is good for you. It helps you to have strong bones. But then when you, that, you can say that maybe to, you know, a 5, 6 year old. But, and you can actually show them, let's say, bones from, let's say, a leftover, you know, chicken, which you've roasted or something, and they can feel their bones and feel how strong they are. But then with the older children, you can go a little bit more deeper with respect to that. Okay, so yes, we need healthy bones. Why? Because, you know, bones, obviously, you know, they give the structure to our body, etc. And how different foods can then help to create these healthy bones. So maybe with the young children we focus only on milk, but then with the older children you can mention other foodstuffs which will also contribute to having healthier bones. So yes, that had to be very clear, you know, choosing the messages and wording the messages, not only the choice of wording, but also the level of difficulty of the science which you put across. It's no use even, I mean, you know, when I'm teaching our prospective primary school teachers up here at university, I tell them, you know, don't overwhelm the children with words such as protein, calcium, etc. Even at age 8, 9, that's a little bit beyond them. Those are chemicals. They haven't maybe reached that depth of understanding yet, because it's very difficult to show that visually. You know, so just be very practical in what you say, and something which is very concrete, very visual, which you can actually show, they can feel, etc. And that's very important, you know, with the age groups.
The workbooks themselves, they have So that's a lesson by lesson. How are they divided?
Yes. Well, what happens is the workbooks are basically made up of different activities, but they are developmental in nature, in the sense that if, let's say, in the year two, in the younger children's workbook, you're starting off basically with naming, identification of different foods. Then you move a little bit to the sources of foods, and then you can talk about how different foods are prepared and how they consume them, sometimes raw, sometimes cooked. So it's developmental in nature. One thing builds on the other. What is interesting, and actually which, you know, I purposely wanted to include in the workbooks, I also wanted to emphasize not only in the sense the health aspect, but also bringing in things like traditional foodstuffs. So, for example, in one of the workbooks, there's the recipe of, it's like a picture composition. Basically, it's six little diagrams of how to make balbuliata. So it's fun to going to the fresh, you know, the farmer's market, also bringing in these concepts of new things which are available, you know, in Malta, going to the farmer's market, buying his fresh produce there for this balbuliata, going home, obviously the hygiene aspect, putting on the apron, washing his hands, preparing the balbuliata, how he's doing. So it's all pictures. And then the children, this is for year fives, have to write it up. So it's a Maltese, actually, lesson. So it's writing an essay in Maltese. But let's say many children will have no idea what balbuliata is. So you're making them aware of this traditional recipe using tomatoes, onions, basically. I know people have different versions of this recipe, but let's say the very staple and very basic ingredients are tomatoes and onions and eggs. People add jubane if they want to, you know. So the emphasis on the local traditional, that's, and the seasonal as well. We wanted to bring in the sustainability message. That was crucial as well. So healthy eating, physical activity, and local traditional seasonal foods as well.
Yes, I remember one of the pictures you had in the books was of the bones of the immortality, the 2nd of November.
Yes,
the
okay.
Things you find, yes, in the various shops.
La Dom Talmeti, the bones of the. Yes.
And I'm always amused because my mother-in-law was keen on this tradition. And,
yes,
and
I see.
She always insisted that my children, as they were growing up, had these
were exposed to it. Yes.
And sometimes I mentioned this to my colleagues here, yes, at the university, and they've absolutely no idea, yeah, about it.
That's,
and I was
true,
taken aback, because I said, oh, it was so very much part of my children's growing up. Mm-hmm.
No, definitely. I mean, even within the national curriculum and the various syllabi for the different subjects, as I said, you know, all the activities are linked to a school subject. So, for example, this, you know, promotion of local food traditions comes in through social studies. It can come in through history, even sort of perhaps, you know, where certain foodstuffs are grown, even locally, or where, let's say, you know, you associate ormi with bread, for example, and you associate different, maybe, you know, the more rural areas with the fruits and vegetables, gozo, maybe with the jubaneet and things like that. So we wanted to bring these messages across as well, because, I mean, not only in Malta, but research has shown that many children, unfortunately, have lost touch or have no idea, really, about the source of the food. Or else they've been so much exposed to more westernized foods that they, as you said, I mean, even with your colleagues who are older, they're not aware of the local foods. I'll give you an example, just as a little aside, from other research which I've conducted. I was showing some traditional tea time sweets to children. They were 5-6 year olds, or even 7 year olds. So I was showing things like biscottini, biscotelli, talhmira, you know, the dough rings. Different things. Well, I was in a particular school and I took out these, you know, biscottelli, sort of brown, longish, crunchy things. And I said, do you ever consume these? And a boy said to me, oh yes, that's garlic bread, is it? I have it at this particular fast food place. I said, no, that's not garlic bread. Oh, he said, what is it then? So he thought of it as garlic bread. He had never seen this food as a tea time sweet, biscottelli, you know. So that's,
and how good they are.
And how good they are. And they are actually a healthier tea time sweet, not very high in sugar, in fats, etc. So it's not only to perpetuate the tradition, but many of our traditional local foods are actually healthier. Not all of them, but then they can be modified.
Yes, we'll mention pastizzi, shall we?
Yes, we'll mention pastizzi. But again, I mean, we're not saying to abolish
everything
them
in moderation.
From our diet. That's the message then. And you would say that to children. That's fine to have them, but not every day in large amounts.
What about the the teachers, because you've really done this wonderful, I was terribly impressed with the handbook for the
yes.
for the teachers themselves, so they can really get to grips with what messages they're
yes,
supposed
yes.
to put across.
Definitely. I mean, that was key. You know, I'm meeting teachers all the time when we visit schools, etc., and talk to teachers. And I appreciate, I've been a teacher myself in schools, you know, as I was in the early stages of my career. It's not easy for teachers. A dedicated teacher has lots of work to do in preparing, you know, the lessons and obviously delivering and correcting, etc. So when you have a subject such as, let's say, health and nutrition, which is not really a timetabled subject, so we're asking teachers to deliver this health and nutrition education through other subjects, basically. Now the new curriculum, maybe there may be some timetabled time, so that's definitely a big step forward and a very positive step forward. But still, the more resources you can give to teachers so they can just look at those resources, see, you know, yes, I can apply this in my classroom with my students. Here I have the materials which I'm going to use with the students. Here I have how it's linked with the subject and what are the key messages I need to put across. So we really spelt it out for the teachers. Within this activity, you can talk about, let's say, why this food is healthy, where it is sourced, how, you know, how it's prepared, ask the children how they prepared, how they like to consume it, what they like about it, what they don't like about it, so many things depending on the, you know, on the particular worksheet which they're working with. And then with the teachers, we also suggested what we would call extension activities. So activities which they could give as homework to the children, maybe to involve the parents as well, or activities which they could do as part of an open day at school, or maybe during morning assembly, so they get the children to do something as a follow-up to the activity, and then they present it during morning assembly. This is something which is becoming very common nowadays in schools, that they will have what are called special morning assemblies, maybe once a week, which is a little bit longer than normal, and classes are designated to do something special, educational in a way, or, you know, I mean, education is broader sense. It could be literally teaching something, it could be about culture, etc. And a class has that role, and they take the center stage in that morning assembly and do something. So we wanted to give ideas for teachers as well, how they could do that, you know, do these things in morning assembly. So teachers, you know, I wanted to make it as easy as possible for the teachers to use the pack. Everything is another thing which was very important, and we were discussing this just before the program started as well. The materials are sometimes in English and sometimes in Maltese. The reason for this is that according to our national curriculum, certain subjects should be taught in Maltese. So obviously Maltese itself, social studies, religion, history, they are taught in Maltese, whereas things like mathematics, English of course, science would be taught in English. So the worksheets respect that and reflect that. So according to the subject, the different languages, either Maltese or English, is used. So really, it's a pack which a teacher can take, and he or she can say, okay, it's sort of everything is here ready for me. I can just go into the classroom, prepare a bit, of course, like any good teacher should, read up the materials before. And of course, a teacher can, in a sense, adapt according to the students of his or her classroom, in the sense of, you know, although there is a sequence, in a sense, a developmental sequence to the worksheets, but if a teacher feels he or she wants to change the sequence, there's no problem with doing that. They can adapt accordingly. And, you know, all the materials on the DVD, the PowerPoints, the interviews with children, they can be used as, you know, whichever way the teacher wishes to use them. I mean, if you're going to present, let's say, the photo story of children preparing a healthy snack, you might integrate that with an English lesson, things like sequencing or giving instructions or things, you know, naming of food, but as I said, sequencing, sort of the process of something. So the teacher can really be very flexible, or she might want to integrate that with a maths lesson. So quantities and recipes
and weighing
and measuring and maybe estimating as well, and things like time, you know, taken to produce something. And then, okay, so let's double the quantity, so multiplication. So it's very flexible. A creative teacher can really, we would say, have a field day with the resource pack if he or she wants to.
Yes, I was absolutely fascinated by it. I'm not into teaching myself, but I could see that this could be really inspiring. In fact, one of the comments on your
webinar,
presentation,
yes,
webinar, was, wonderful project and so complete. And I thought, yes, you're absolutely right. It's really A to Z, one really wonderful. But this is, in fact, a pilot project, isn't it? So you were looking also for feedback
definitely.
From people.
Definitely. I mean, this, the pack, you know, sort of the original version of the pack was produced. We went into different schools around Malta and Gozo, and the materials were given to teachers and they used them, both year two teachers and year five teachers. So they used them for a couple of weeks. They had about, you know, 2 months or so to use as many of the materials as possible. To be fair, with year two teachers, it was easier for them because maybe even their sort of syllabus is a little bit more flexible. With year five teachers, I really appreciated that they went out of the way to use as many of the materials as possible in the classroom because their sort of time is a little bit more restricted, you know, a bit more rigorous in the sense of their curriculum and the syllabi and the work which they need to do with the children. But the teachers, after, you know, these couple of weeks, 2 months or so, I went back into schools and had interviews with the teachers. I had actually class interviews with the children as well. I also interviewed the different school management teams, either the heads of schools or assistant heads of schools of the particular pilot schools. And eventually, but I'll talk about that in a while, even had phone interviews with some parents. Now, the purpose of the interviews was basically twofold. In a sense, how the content was received, both by the children, did they enjoy working, you know, on the worksheets, what did they learn, basically. So I did what is called a pre and post test. So before the pilot started, children were asked a set of about 10 questions, knowledge-based. Then after the pilot, I asked the same questions, and I wanted to see if there was an improvement in their knowledge. And overall, we can say that there was an improvement in knowledge, even in just those sort of 6, 7, 8 weeks or so. So that was very good. There were one or two questions which had posed difficulties, and this is something, that's why, you know, pilot projects are done. There were certain things like, I'll give you a very concrete example. For example, when in the pilot test, children were they had this statement that, let's say, water, iced tea, and iced tea are equally good as healthy drinks, something along those lines. And I did that purposely because many people, young and old, have this misperception that iced tea is a healthy drink, whereas iced tea, canned iced tea, not homemade iced tea, where you can control how much sugar you put in, but canned iced tea can be very high in sugar, unless it is a diet version. So many children actually said that, yes, that's true, that both iced tea and water are healthy. What happened was possibly that in the classroom, teachers maybe did not have time to explain that message well enough. So let's say there was not so much improvement in the knowledge there. So that also shows that, one, to be fair on the teachers, they need to have more time to work through this. Here you have a year's worth, if you want to. So, you know, we need to give time to the teachers to work through the worksheets and all the materials. And you know, teachers need to sit down and, as I said, read the workbook and the handbook before they actually go into the classroom to make sure that they are very clear with the messages they need to put across.
Unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. I'd like to thank Dr. Suzanne Piscopor for coming to the studio to talk to us about this excellent project, Healthy Eating with Fonso. And I do hope that your workbooks find their way into every primary school in Malta, because I think it's absolutely fascinating and really, really useful educational material. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.